Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with your hosts from thehammerspeaks.com, David Todd, and from SteelersDepot.com, Dave Bryan. Just two Daves talking all the Steelers football you could ever want. And now, here's Dave and Dave.
Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave. He's Dave Bryan of SteelersDepot.com, the most comprehensive Steelers site on the internet, and I'm David Todd. This is Season 2, Episode 116. Dave, today, Tuesday, the final stage here of kind of the pre-camp exercises. The Steelers are in mini-camp. This is mandatory. As far as we know, everybody's attending. Mike Wallace, of course, it's not mandatory for him because he's not under contract. But the Steelers have had the last 3 days, and I guess the good news is we expected the guys, Mike Adams, DeCastro, and Ta'amu, the Steelers, three of the first four Steeler draft picks to be there. And as far as I can tell, I've seen some quotes from Mike Adams, everybody is there.
Yeah, all three rookies, DeCastro, Mike Adams, Alameda, Ta'amu, are all there. I haven't seen a report yet of who's not there. I think we do know that James Harrison is not working today with that. I believe it to be the fluid on the knee that's kind of sidelined him at the end of OTA sessions. And Mark Cabali also reports that Curtis Brown is not practicing today either. Now, we don't know whether or not what the extent of that injury is. You know, maybe a hamstring, probably something along those lines. So hopefully we'll find about more about that later in the day. And as far as DeCastro and Adams go, it's everything that Sean Coogler told us it would be. It looks like both those guys are getting a lot of work. Day one, working at, of course, Adams at left tackle, DeCastro at right guard, and working with both the first and second team and working up quite a bit of sweat. So, that's what we expected to see there. And, you know, as far as other stuff, Ta'amu, of course, you know, with John Mitchell, this is a guy that's going to break him down all the way and put him back together. So I wouldn't be caught up in too much of the reports of what does or does not happen with the rookie out of Washington there to start things off.
Yep. And of course, Jason Worlds isn't going today. But otherwise, as you said, we assume the Steelers probably just wrapped things up. They're having lunch, and we'll expect more from the beat writers after they finish with their post session interviews, both on Twitter and on their blogs and sites. Dave, the other just kind of piece of news that came out, and you have this on SteelersDepot.com, of course, is that Steelers signed a long snapper, and we talked about it before we got on air. They like to have two guys in camp. What we don't know is the corresponding roster move, because I think we both thought they had 90 guys under contract. So if they actually did only had 89 guys under contract, obviously they wouldn't have to do anything. But if they did have 90, then somebody got released.
Absolutely. And they signed Matt Cthulhu. People probably recognize that name. He was originally signed with the Baltimore Ravens as an undrafted free agent in 2005 and won the long snapping job for them that year and snapped for them for five seasons. He was released by the Ravens before the start of the 2010 season during the final cutdowns, signed with the New England Patriots later that November in 2010, where he finished out the season with them. He was released by the Patriots prior to the start of last season, signed with the Vikings last year and played the final five games with them as well. The Steelers like to have two long snappers in camp. Cthulhu worked out for the Steelers back in mid-May, it was reported. So I guess this is kind of a move that we kind of could have foreseen coming here. He'll challenge Greg Warren, but unless Greg tears up one of those knees again, Warren's going to be a hard guy to beat there. But this is just a guy to have in the Rolodex there to help split some of the time in training camp there. And we'll have to wait and see what the corresponding roster move was that should come out later today.
Yeah, and some interesting stuff today, Dave, that Mark Cabali's tweeting that the first team O-line just went out there. He spoke with Trey Essex, and Trey Essex got the start at right tackle, with Foster at right guard, Pouncey at center, Cologne at left guard, and interestingly enough, Marcus Gilbert at left tackle. Now, there's nothing overly surprising about this. They didn't have the rookies their first time in, run with the first team, But it's a little interesting that they had Trey on the right side and Marcus Gilbert on the left side. I would have thought maybe they would have run Trey on the left side, but I don't want to read too much into it, but that's how they started things out the first day of camp with everybody around.
Yeah, I think that's a hat tip to your veterans right there, not letting the rookies think that they've got anything locked up right now from day one. So that's not too surprising. And, you know, Sean Coogler said last week that, hey, we're going to get Marcus Gilbert some reps here at left tackle along the way, just in case that we don't have to surprise him down the line. You know, maybe throughout the training camp, if Mike Adams does not work out a left tackle, then it's not a surprise to Gilbert, and he has had some time to take some reps over there. Let's face it, David, Trey Essex, you know, we saw, I think it was a game against the Texans last year. He can't play left tackle. I know he's lost all this weight and all like that, but you cannot go into the season if Mike Adams is not going to be your left tackle. You can't go into the season thinking Jonathan Scott or Trey Essex is. So, you know, I'm much more comfortable with Essex over there on the right side. It's interesting that Essex got the snaps at right tackle over Jonathan Scott, maybe a little bit. But I don't think Jonathan Scott's long for this roster anyway if things work out how the Steelers think they're going to work out this year.
Right. We spent extensive time on it on Friday about the versatility of guys, having guys dressed up. The other piece of news, Dave, that no surprise, we talked about it a lot when he was drafted, seventh-round pick out of SMU, Kevin Beachum. He's going to move inside to guard.
Absolutely. You know, Beachum, an undersized tackle, played left tackle at SMU, kind of long legs for his build. He's got a very unique build to him, and talked to him about that when I had him on the podcast after the draft and all like that. But it's not too surprising that this kid, based on his build and all like that, is going to move inside there at guard. So, you know, now that Mike Adams is in camp, that's one less guy that needs to be taking reps out there at tackle. So I don't find that move too surprising, and I think that's probably where Beachum's going to stay throughout the rest of the mini camps and on into training camp as well.
Yep, that's where Beachum's going to spend his year on the practice squad.
it's really going to take an outstanding performance for him to make the 53-man roster. You know, I think a guy that the kid out of Furman that we had on the podcast as well too, he's an exciting prospect as well. But you know, even he, I think he and Beachum are probably going to be two guys to kind of, you know, battle it out for a practice squad spot. So, you know, I think to make the 53-man roster, I think the Steelers would probably have to keep, let's say, what, 9 offensive linemen, and that would have to include Jonathan Scott being cut as well. So I'm with you, David. I think Beachum and the kid out of Furman are probably going to be battling for that practice squad spot.
Yeah, and that is the case, and what's interesting is for these guys – this is, you know, it may not sound like the ideal situation coming in when you've drafted 2 offensive linemen with your first 2 picks, and the Steelers obviously spent a lot of money on a bunch of linemen in the past couple of years. But what you have here is it's going to be an opportunity for Beachum to play guard, as you said, probably on the practice squad this year. And then you say, okay, now Ramon Foster's a year older, Doug Ligurski's a year older, Trey Essex is a year older. If those 3 guys are backups that are actually on the roster, then, you know, there's going to be an opportunity, if these guys show progress, to really be on the team on the 2013 roster. So, look, I mean, that's looking way down the line, but it probably is an ideal situation for Beachum if he can go and show in camp that we know he's a smart kid, and if he can go and show he has some talent and some versatility, maybe he has a chance to get one of those roles next year.
Yeah, and, you know, Doug Ligurski and Ramon Foster, they're going to be unrestricted next year. So, you know, I know a lot of people are speculating, well, give Ligurski a contract extension now. Yeah, that's just not – I don't think that's going to happen.
No, it's not going to happen.
You know, it's just not going to happen. You know, they're going to ride – they're going to play out the season the way it is. As you said, one of these guys – well, Ligurski himself was a practice squad guy, and that's how they like to bring a lot of their reserve linemen up through the system, basically, so to speak, is through the practice squad. So, unless – you know, if both Ramon Foster and Doug Legursky end up starting at some point, and hopefully they don't have to because that means there's injuries in front of them, and let's say they have great seasons, well, they're gone, via free agency anyway then at that point. So, yeah, they're going to keep one or two of these young kids on the practice squad and groom them just the way they do with, a great example with Legursky.
Yeah, and, again, we get back to this. I think a lot of people were, I don't want to say misled because I don't think there was any deceit involved, but a lot of people were led to believe that the salary cap would go from $120 million last year to $125, $130 million over the next 2 years. And we now have come to find out with this whole Redskin and Cowboy fiasco where they got hit on the cap, that the number is actually is very likely to stay flat here for these 2 years. And while saving $500,000 doesn't sound like a particularly big number, you do that around four or five guys, and it gives you an opportunity to pay guys. And if the fact of the matter is Ramon Foster and Doug Legursky are going to be in a position to make $1.5-2 million a year next year, and Beecham and whomever else it may be are in a position to make $550,000, well, that money's going to pay Antonio Brown, that money's going to pay Emmanuel Sanders, and that money's going to pay maybe White Mike Wallace. So, these things – These backup positions, if talent is talent's close, the cheaper guys stand around.
Absolutely. I couldn't have said it better myself because, let's face it, paying Legursky and Ramon Foster, their tenders this year alone, $1 million to be a backup, they got to be on their screws too. Let's face it. I mean, if those guys aren't performing up to that paycheck, then if there's one of these rookies or undrafted guys that look like they, can hold down the fort there, then they're gone, before the start of the season. I don't think that's going to happen, especially with the versatility that Doug Legursky gives you over the, at center as well as both guard spots. But yeah, definitely moving forward into, you constantly got to be looking at the roster, one, two, three years out the best as you can as it relates to the salary cap. And as you said, it looks like next year it's going to be flat as well.
Yep. So Dave, as we said, we'll have a lot more on what actually went down in minicamp on Friday's session. Because, as we said, we got 3 days of work ahead of us because they really haven't talked too much about what happened today. But a couple things came out. We didn't get a chance to talk about Scotty Montgomery's comments about the wide receivers on Friday. He spoke after we had done our podcast. Again, nothing earth-shattering, but he had some interesting stuff to say about Antonio Brown.
Yeah, Bob Labriola had the one-on-one interview with him that aired. I can't remember if it was Thursday or Friday last week. It's not up on their website and all like that, but I was able to record it and go back through it and all like that. Scotty was basically asked to break down all four of his wide receivers, and of course I'm talking about Antonio Brown, Mike Wallace, Emmanuel Sanders, and Jericho Cotchery. The funny thing about Antonio Brown is really the only one flaw he could find with this kid is that he basically you just need to make sure he backs off a little bit and rest some. He says Antonio Brown, when he wakes up every morning at 6 a.m. and starts working out, he doesn't stop working out until about 10 a.m. basically is what Montgomery said. He wakes up every morning wanting to be the best in the world. And boy, what quiet, that's hell of a praise from a wide receivers coach when asked to kind of break you down. And that's really the only thing that he could say was wrong with him, as far as Antonio Brown goes. Now, when he moved on to Emmanuel Sanders, and this is something that you and I have talked about, of what a great route runner and what a probably the best skilled guy on the Steelers roster. Of course, injuries have not allowed him to show that all of a lot, during his first 2 years in the league. But Montgomery said from a standpoint of just a receiver skill and fundamentals, he's great. He says the things that he needs to work on is basically strength, which he says core strength and his lower body strength, and just working every day to be the best that he can be coming in and out of his breaks and being healthy. So basically he points to strength with him and his ability to stay on the field. Mike Wallace, outside, basically Montgomery said, hey, this is a guy that's one of the fastest that he's ever seen from that standpoint. And his ability to track down the ball, the deep ball in addition, he said is just outstanding. He says just needs to work on his feet and getting him in and out of his breaks. And I think that's something that we've seen with Mike Wallace is that this is a guy that yeah, he can beat you deep there, but you know, being able to win the one-on-one battles in the short areas of the field and getting in and out of his breaks across the middle is one thing that I think everybody would agree that Mike Wallace has, and he has made improvement on, and it's one thing that they're going to expect him to make even a further improvement on this upcoming year. And Jericho Cotchery, really, you know, he gushed over Jericho Cotchery basically from a veteran standpoint.
Consummate professional, right?
Absolutely. He said, hey, look, if these young receivers or anybody for that matter in the locker room needs somebody to go to without their business getting out and all like that, he says, you know, Jericho's your guy. He's the consummate professional. From a football standpoint, he is well above the line, said Montgomery. He just happy to have him there. They're tickled to have him back in a position where they have him right now. Thankful to have him come back for at least two more seasons with the Steelers.
Yeah, I think, you know, we have talked about that. For me, in the offseason, it was priority number one, get Jericho Cotchery back. Obviously, they had to get backup quarterbacks under contract, but we knew that was going to happen. I love the guy. I think he fits the system. You hear what guys say about him in the locker room, particularly with, you know, the Young Money crowd. All these guys, the good thing is, and I know there's some question about where Mike Wallace's head is, but generally these guys, and Sanders and Antonio Brown, fit this bill really well of just being solid, good guys, really have their, you know, as a young professional athlete, well, obviously we've seen hundreds of guys kind of go down the wrong track or not have their priorities in the way that you might hope they would. And these guys really do seem to have the stuff in order, and having Jericho Cotchery there, I'm sure, helps all of that. And we've kind of gushed ourselves about the Steelers receiving core. And, you know, there's not a team in the NFL that's going to put four guys on the field like the Steelers are this fall, assuming everybody stays healthy.
I couldn't agree more. And Cotchery, you know, you listen to his interviews, man, and just super soft-spoken guy, nothing to really read into anything he says. I think he's a guy that what you see is what you get. Great guy to assume the leadership role and carry the torch forward from Hines Warden. You know, last year, David, we were calling him too. Hey, this is a guy that's insurance for Hines Ward, and that's the same role he's going to play this year as well. You know, I'm sure they want Emmanuel Sanders to win that slot position there, the third down type role. But you know, if he can't or if he can't stay on the field, I really don't think they miss much of a beat by plugging Jericho in there. And we saw how big this guy can contribute in key situations late in the AFC wildcard game against the Denver Broncos.
Dead on. The other thing maybe just we can touch on, Dave, is I think a lot of talk when Sean Spence was drafted of what his role is going to be. Is he a guy who's going to be a package hybrid guy? He fills a role in the Steelers as a guy who can play, you know, maybe inside, maybe can play both inside and outside, but he's not the biggest, most physical guy. But what he is he's a nonstop motor guy. He's a very good tackler, and he's going to have a special teams role right out of the bat. But you posted some stuff. You posted a piece about Sean Spence, and we know that there. I don't really think it's fair to say that there's a competition for a starting inside backer spot. But you talked about how what's going on with him is a little different than what happened with Kendrell Bell when he came in, whenever that was, 10 years ago.
Yeah, you know, the best thing about Sean Spence, David, is you have a guy that most people, most talking heads that cover all 32 teams after the Steelers drafted Sean Spence, they're kind of scratching their head saying, wow, what was this pick in the third round? That's, you know, that's the biggest head scratcher that they had there in the Steelers draft. Well, the more you hear about this guy's name is constantly being dropped by everybody in the media. Then, of course, Keith Butler praised him this past week. Dick LeBeau praised him as incredibly smart kid picking things up. But, you know, looking at ahead and the prospects of him starting his rookie season, it's easy, I know, to point back to Kendrell Bell back in 2001. But Kendrell Bell, and I know, David, as I recount this, you're probably going to – it's all going to come back to you as well, too. When the Steelers ended the 2000 season, they had LeVon Kirkland at strong inside linebacker, and Earl Holmes was a weak inside linebacker. Well, during that offseason that followed, Kirkland was released prior to the draft, and the Steelers went out and signed that veteran Mike Jones, I think 32 years old at the time, because they had no depth at the inside linebacker position because Mike Vrabel had also left via free agency to the Patriots. John Fiala, how's that name for a blast of the past, was mostly regarded as a special teams player at that time. So they brought in Mike Jones hoping he was going to win the weak side job. They shifted Earl Holmes over to the strong side. It also took a little pressure off the Steelers in the upcoming 2001 draft to draft one early and force himself to move up. Of course, everybody probably remembers the name Dan Morgan and how the Steelers were really hoping that Dan Morgan would fall to them at 16. Of course, the Panthers ripped him off the board earlier than that. The Steelers traded down with the Jets and ended up drafting Casey Hampton. And then, of course, Kendrell Bell was drafted in the second round. Well, you know, heading into that camp that year, David, all Kendrell Bell had for competition was a first-year player in the Steelers' defense in Mike Jones. And I'm not sure if you remember that first preseason game against the Atlanta Falcons there. Mike Jones started alongside Earl Holmes, but it was Kendrell Bell in relief that just totally stole the game and was the best player on the field in that preseason game, bar none. And the coaches, Tim Lewis, defensive coordinator, gushed about him at the time. And from that point on, first preseason game on, it was all about Kendrell Bell making plays in training camp and in preseason. And by the last preseason game, Kendrell Bell had run circles around Mike Jones. So, you know, it wasn't that tough of a path for Kendrell Bell to become the starting weeks inside linebacker for the Steelers. So I think we'd both agree that with what the Steelers have on the roster with Larry Foote, Stevenson Sylvester, of course, Timmons, you throw in a few other names that, you know, might try to compete inside there. But Morty Ivey was the name I was searching for there. But Sean Spence has got a much tougher road to starting week one than Kendrell Bell did.
Yeah, and, you know, come on, let's be realistic about it. It's not, it's, you know, you and I would both be shocked if Sean Spence was a starter in week one.
If it wasn't because of an injury, I would be floored. I mean, let's face it, Larry Foote knows this defense. He's capable of running the defense. He's capable of playing at a high level. I think, Keith Butler, when he said on Thursday that, look, you know, this is not a guy that's probably going to start, initially, but, you know, I wouldn't rule out him not playing his rookie season. He kind of mirrored that to Lamar Woodley and Lawrence Timmons, both of their rookie seasons as well, too. So unless injury happens, and then you would think that Stevenson Sylvester would be the next guy possibly to slide in there, I just don't see it. Now, later on in the year, week 11, week 13, all bets are off the board. I wouldn't put my house up up against a bet from that happening, as unlikely as it is to happen. Things change, and you don't know the shape of the roster at that time, how people have played. You don't know what the record are. But if the Steelers are competing for the division week 13 or 14, and that means everybody's playing well, I still don't see Sean Spence cracking the starting lineup. He's going to be more of a situational guy.
Yeah, and we've talked about when the Steelers are looking for money, and, you know, Larry Foote's going to have a contract up. And as you say, late in the season, he's another guy who, at the end of the year, Steelers are going to make decisions. I mean, what will be very interesting is, when we're sitting here next June, to look at how much the Steelers roster has turned over. Now, I think we both expect, again, this is not to get into a long conversation about the 2013 roster, but there certainly will be a possibility that Ike Taylor, Ryan Clark, Brett Kiesel, Larry Foote are all gone from this defense And that would be a pretty full turnover. I mean, you know, Ike Taylor's could cost a lot of money. We'll see how these three young corners develop. But that would be a way to save money. He'd probably still be a useful football player. But Ryan Clark will certainly be in a situation in his 30s where he's a guy who could be gone at that point in time. And you know, Kiesel would probably think has 2 years left, but you never know. And Foote probably only has 1 year left. So all these things are going to happen. We see this turnover. It's how the Steelers are going to get to keep the wide receivers they have, to get other guys, young guys, under bigger contracts. You know, we're going to continue to see this transition. The good thing is the guys who left this year really weren't contributing at the end of last season. And we'll see it, just as you said, week 13, whenever all bets are off, who knows if guys have been phased out of their roles, and Larry Foote could be one of those guys.
Absolutely. Reload, don't rebuild, right?
You know, exactly.
And you know, I think it's safe to say that Foote, you know, being in his final year, unless he comes back on a minimum in a reserve role, you know, as long as his play is still up there, kind of, you know, in a reserve type role, I could see that happening possibly. But his contract is up. James Harrison, I think we talked about on a recent podcast, this is a guy, hey, back injuries don't magically get better. And at his age, you know, we'll have to see how it plays out. Now, of course, if Harrison's Pro Bowl-type performance plays, let's say, 14 or 15 of the 16 games this year, sacks are up there, then, you know, he's definitely living up to his contract, they think, then he hangs around. Kiesel's another name we mentioned. But, yeah, I mean, definitely come the later part of the year, depending on the state of how people played up to that point, you could see some more of the new talent phased in. And look at Cortez Allen last year. Around the middle of the season, get some more looks on the defense, his rookie year in that dime type stuff there. So they're constantly looking to give these guys some snaps. Let's hope we have some blowouts this year, because there's not a better time to get people, some young talent, some playing time when you're ahead, you know, 31 to nothing in the third or fourth quarter.
Dave, not a lot of Steeler news other than what we've hit on here for the first 30 minutes, but a couple things around the league, and certainly around the division, and we'll talk more about this in the coming weeks where we've got when we've got time to fill. But you know, the Brown quarterback battle is fully up, and the beat writers are tweeting a fair bit today, talking to Seneca Wallace and Colt McCoy. And these two guys, one thing about Seneca Wallace is it's always been against him. He had to work hard to play in college. He had to work hard to make it in the NFL. He's got the occasional start at different times, but he's never been the guy. He's been thrown in to opportunities with other guys getting hurt. And then unfortunately for him in Cleveland last year, he got hurt when the other guys got hurt both the past 2 years. Talking about, he said, you know, a very realistic approach, a very down-to-earth guy. He said, look, I know they drafted Brandon Reed in the first round for a reason. He realizes he is not competing for the starting job in Baltimore and Cleveland, but he understands that he's battling Colt McCoy for the backup job. And he says, look, they know what I bring to the table. If that's enough, who knows? Now, Colt McCoy has also handled this, I think, very well. We talked around the draft about, you know, is that an insult or whatever? It's the NFL. You should never be insulted. You're not entitled to a position. There's competition for positions. They went and got a quarterback in the first round, and McCoy's going to have to win his job. His approach is, you know, every day I take the field, I go out and I want to be the number one quarterback and do the best I can do. He says all the right things. He's a smart kid. He's a, from the people I've talked to that talk to him, he's a likable guy. He's had some tough situations, the Harrison hit that we're going to talk about in a bit on him, and then being put back in the game and the Cleveland organization taking a lot of heat for that. Their doctors focusing on his hand and not his head and allowing him to re-enter the game with an apparent concussion. But it's an interesting situation down there. They've had Whedon run with the first team. It looks like I kind of expect that Whedon's going to get the opening day start for them. And then the question is, do they want to have Colt McCoy on the roster? Do they want to try to move him? Would they actually consider releasing him? And what happens? Because there are guys out there that think Colt McCoy can be a good starting NFL quarterback. I don't know, you know, when I think about guys like Matt Moore, when we think about the kid in Kansas City who was injured a lot of last year, who was the guy who was in New England? I'm drawing a blank.
Oh, Matt Cassel.
Matt Cassel. I don't know where Colt McCoy falls. Kind of those two guys are guys I think are mid-level, you know, 20th best type starting NFL quarterbacks. I don't know if Colt McCoy can be that. but it'll be interesting to see how they run this down in Cleveland over the next 6 weeks, because they've added, you know, they've had a lot of draft picks, so they've had a decent infusion of young talent into that organization.
Tell me you don't think McCoy just wants to get the hell out of there.
Well, I gotta think it hasn't been the most wonderful experience.
I remember you recreate, you know, while you were talking about that article about them screaming at him.
Yeah, the Mike Silver article.
Live. Yeah, that, what a great piece that was. And you know, with the concussion thing last year, and with his dad, with the comments that he made kind of criticizing the Browns organization, and Colt McCoy is on the Dan Patrick show on Friday basically saying, of course, he doesn't remember the hit of James Harrison last year in that game, but he didn't think it was a cheap shot. And, boy, you got to know that infuriates Browns fans even more to say something like that. And I know the kid's saying all the right things, but you have to think right now that this kid's just saying, oh, my God, let me just get to another organization where I can start over right now. So I found, you know, I don't know, you know, we talked about the Whedon thing to death and all like that. When you look over the quarterbacks that they've drafted over the years, and man, it just that I don't know if I'm convinced that Whedon is a guy or not, you know, but I don't think McCoy is starter material. I think he is a number two guy that can hang around the league for a while, though. So just what a filthy situation over there. And like I said, I bet McCoy just wants to get the hell out of that town.
Yeah, I agree with you. He's a young kid. He's got, I think he's a better quarterback than Jimmy Clausen. I don't think Jimmy Clausen's ever going to even.
I agree.
Yeah, I'll be surprised if Jimmy Clausen actually, I'm pretty sure he's not going to be a number two on anybody's roster this year. He probably has another year or two in the league, maybe. But he's a fringe guy. I think Colt McCoy's better than that. I think Colt McCoy actually has a decent arm, particularly for a guy his size, and has some of the intangibles that you'd like to have in the quarterback position, certainly the mobility and the toughness. But we will see what happens there. Not a lot of news out of Ravens camp or Bengals camp. We've seen some turnover on the Bengals roster, but they've had a reasonably good offseason. The Ravens, we talked about some of the injuries that have hit them, and we touched on the fact that tons of guys didn't show up for these OTAs, but they'll all be in for their mini camp, obviously, as that's mandatory, and we'll kind of bounce around the league on that. Dave, the other piece of news was we mentioned on Friday that Gronkowski had signed the big contract. Greg Bedard put out a piece, I think it was yesterday, looking at the actual implications of the contract and how it would be implemented. And again, today, Pro Football Talk, Mike Florio's got a post up talking about that it's really a four-year deal with the six-year extension. It's really a four-year deal. Talks about the money that he gets, the guaranteed money. There's, I think, $7 million up front, and then $5 million in 2015, various different things. It'll be interesting to see if the Steelers look at that contract at all as a template for Mike Wallace. I think you and I both agree that Mike Wallace isn't going to get $15 million a year from the Steelers. The question is, in the open market, he's certainly going to, depending on his performance this year, of course, but he's certainly going to get, if Vincent Jackson got 11, Mike Wallace is going to get 10 or 11 and maybe more. And so will the Steelers be able to stomach something, or will Mike Wallace be able to stomach something where he's maybe getting an average annual value of 9 a year, but some more of that is guaranteed, so that, you know, he gets 30 or 35 guaranteed or something like that. So just another talking point when thinking about seeing guys signed to long-term contracts.
Yeah, and you know, another piece on the Ravens here, we talked about Mike McAdoo the other day, the other outside linebacker that was that went down. I believe he had an Achilles as well, too. Well, the Ravens went ahead and released him. And they also, I think since we last talked, David, they signed former offensive Cincinnati Bengals offensive guard Bobby Williams, who was hanging around there on the street. And it's when you look at the two-year contract that he got, is worth $2.925 million and includes an $800 signing bonus. So, you know, that's a lot of money to pay a guy to be a backup, in my opinion. So, you know, hey, there's just more changes for the Ravens going forward here, you know, as well. So I think one other note there is Chad Ochocinco signed with the Miami Dolphins. So at least, you know, he'll spice up Hard Knocks a little bit. I don't understand that signing on a team that looks to get back to, no nonsense and all, because they sent Brandon Marshall packing and all like that. To me, you're just asking for problems when you bring in Chad Ochocinco there. But I don't know. We'll have to see. It'll definitely make Hard Knocks a little bit more interesting.
Yeah, it is. And, again, I'll just come back to the fact that he was a good teammate last year. And that with Marshall gone, who's a guy who's proven to be a bit of a troubled case as well. I don't know. I mean, Chad Ochocinco, this is a guy who we talked about the big drop-off. And if he wants to be a relevant figure in the sporting world, he's got to play good football. And we'll see if he can do it. I said I'm not at all surprised that somebody's bringing him in. The question is, how long is he around and how well does he play? And it's going to be a performance-based thing. So he knows what he has to do, and he probably this is probably his last shot, his last season. But wouldn't surprise me if he was somewhat productive. He's not going to be productive like he was in Cincinnati, but they're looking for talent down there, and it's just kind of like, I hate to draw a Pirates analogy, but it doesn't cost them anything to bring in somebody who was talented and see if there's anything left in the tank.
You know what I would do? I'd keep him the hell away from Ryan Tannehill, that's for sure.
Well, it's going to be tough to keep your receiver away from your quarterback.
Well, I'm saying about have him, what I mean by that is basically, put it up front that, hey, you get out of that kid's ear. Because Chad's always been one to get me the ball. And I know all receivers are like that, but to me, Chad Ochocinco is just not good medicine for a quarterback, and that's what I mean by keeping him away from him in that aspect is I think he's a guy that can kind of intimidate a rookie through some of his words. And Tannehill doesn't need any more distractions than what he's going to have as a rookie already. So,
I think Chad got his comeuppance last year, got a little humble pie in New England. Somebody was writing an article. Bedard was actually, I think it was Bedard again, talking about how the first day of camp, he dropped a go route from Brady. He ran the wrong route and dropped another ball in the end zone when he was wide open. And everybody said he was a great teammate, and his role was different. So we'll see. I think he understands he's not the guy he was in Cincinnati, and television cameras, they're not going to focus on him like they did in Cincinnati, but we'll see if he wants to contribute and be a football player. So,
does he make the 53-man roster with him?
Yeah, I'll go ahead and say yeah. I mean, I'm kind of rooting for him, to be honest. I think guys like that, they bring something to the NFL. We didn't see much of him last year, but I think he's a reasonably smart guy. He's obviously been a pain in the ass and a self-promoter along the way, but I don't think he's anything like T.O., and I don't think he's anything like Brandon Marshall. He hasn't been arrested for a bunch of things and hadn't beat anybody up or beat up his girlfriend. So, I certainly understand why people dislike him, but I think I'd put him in a different class than some of these other guys.
I'm going to take the other side. I'm going to say he doesn't make the 53-man roster, at least initially. So
the other things kind of going on in the NFL this week, Andrew Luck finishes up at Stanford. He's in the Colts camp. Tebow obviously continues to get attention as he will throughout the season. Maurice Jones-Drew is not going to report to the Jags minicamp, a contract issue. The Titans are going to cut Ben Graham after one season. He's a guy, he came into Pittsburgh last year, right, and took a look.
Who's that?
Yeah, Ben Graham.
Oh, Ben Graham? I don't have much to say on.
didn't he come to Pittsburgh for a visit last year before the season and ended up signing with
him? Oh, the tight end.
Yeah.
The Titans released him. What was his last name again?
Graham.
No. Oh, Graham. I thought you said, Daniel Graham.
Daniel Graham. Sorry, I was calling him Ben Graham.
Yeah, that's where you had me there.
So the guy came in, the Steelers took a look last year, ended up signing with the Titans, and he's going to get released, he has been released.
Yeah, you wonder if, I don't know how many tight ends already Bruce Arians has over there in Indianapolis, but it wouldn't surprise me to see Bruce probably and the Colts maybe kick his tires there. But, yeah, the Steelers had him in last year for the visit. He didn't sign. I think there was also reports that Reggie Kelly last year the Steelers had brought in, they didn't end up signing. signing him either as a tight end. So, you know, a couple of final notes before we wrap up coming out of this first mini camp session, David, was that evidently Essex, Sean Cougar already got on to Mike Adams for quitting on a play. So, you know, that's not the way you want to open things up, but it looked,
who got
Mike Adams, a rookie.
Yeah.
Kugler already got on to him for quitting on a play. A little thing like effort doesn't take a lot of talent to fix, according to Trey Essex. So, not the way to endear your way and, you know, to teammates. It's kind of a knock I've had on Mike Adams ever since he was drafted. Is this a guy whose heart's in it and his core strength is the other? There's no argument that he's got the tools out there. Just can't he put them all in the thing? So, you know, Mike Adams, I think, according to Mike Pursuta here, has been kind of running with the ones and the twos as expected. So, you know, that's a little note there that Mark Cabali passed along.
Yeah, and he also said that halfway through the session, they put DeCastro and Adams in there to get some work with the ones. So they did run with the first team a little bit.
Yeah, and let's face it, David, they're going to give these two guys every opportunity in the world to win these starting jobs. So, you know, I don't know how settled it'll be after this week of mandatory minicamp like Sean Cougar wants it to be. I think that left tackle spot's going to be something that we're going to be talking while on the podcast here throughout the rest of the summer and into training camp.
All right. Well, Dave, I think that kind of covers the majority of stuff. We'll come back. We'll probably have a reasonably full Friday of things to talk about, and then we'll kind of coast for a little bit of the 6 weeks or 5 weeks between the end of minicamp and the start of training camp. But we should have a full list of topics for Friday's show. Anything to add before we close?
Yeah, I think what we'll start doing is after the minicamp wraps up, we'll start getting some of the beat writers from the Bengals and from the Ravens and the Browns and start talking about some of the stuff that's going on, you know, with those teams and all like that. Try to schedule some more player interviews along the line during this downtime as well. One thing I don't think we hit on, Ben Roethlisberger is going to be a daddy.
Yes, I saw that. Good for him.
Here's a question. We'll hit this on the next show. Plenty of time to worry about Ben Roethlisberger being a daddy here, when the baby's due and all like that. But as always, you can follow me on Twitter at Steelers Depot. Follow David at Hammer Speaks. Also, David does amazing work covering the Pirates at DT on Pirates. Follow the show at Terrible Podcast. You can email us theterriblepodcast@gmail.com. Once again, we'd like to thank everybody for the donations through PayPal. There's a link on Steelers Depot. If you feel like you want to support the show, you're not obligated to do so. But we always want to thank the people that have done so far.
Excellent wrap-up. And as always, thanks for listening to the Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave.